British Prime Minister David Cameron has announced his resignation after the majority of Britons voted for UK's exit from the European Union.
I held nothing back. I was absolutely clear about my belief that Britain is stronger, safer, and better off inside the European Union. And I made clear the referendum was about this and this alone, not the future of any single politician, including myself. But the British people have made a very clear decision to take a different path. And as such, I think the country requires fresh leadership to take it in this direction. I will do everything I can as Prime Minister to steady the ship over the coming weeks and months. But I do not think it would be right for me to try to be the captain that steers our country to its next destination. This is not a decision I've taken lightly, but I do believe it's in the national interest to have a period of stability and then the new leadership required. There is no need for a precise timetable today, but in my view, we should aim to have a new Prime Minister in place by the start of the Conservative Party conference in October. The national interest.
And let me congratulate Cameron, who was a supporter of Britain's stay in the EU, said London will confront the undoubtedly significant decision. He added that there will be no initial change in how the UK goods and services are sold. The Prime Minister reassured Britons leaving the EU and Europeans living in Britain that there will be no immediate change affecting their living circumstances. He said the new Prime Minister takes a decision about when to trigger Article 50 and replace the terms of EU membership. The Leave campaign won Thursday's referendum with a margin of 4%. Voter turnout has been over 70%. Let's speak to our correspondent Amina Taylor now, who joins us from Glasgow with the very latest. Now, Amina, British Prime Minister David Cameron there speaking a bit earlier. It is now clear that he will be stepping down as Prime Minister come October. Tell us a bit more about the reactions at your end.
Well, it was not altogether a surprising decision that the Prime Minister decided that his position had become untenable. What is perhaps more eyebrow-raising is the timing of this. There would have been an expectation that there would have been a protracted battle to try and see if David Cameron could try and steady that ship, because after all, even as late as last night, before the polls closed, he was saying he would stay on at Downing Street come what may. But I think the surprising swing, the manner in which Brits rejected the establishment position on this, and the fact that Prime Minister David Cameron had put so much of his own personal political fortunes wrapped up, intertwined, a part of the pro-EU narrative, it made it clear. It was better to nip it in the bud, to stop that being a part of the discussion going forward, and to actually say, look, October is the Tory party conference, and I don't think I should be the man to carry on beyond that. Now, let's just put a couple of other things in perspective. Tim Farron, leader of the Liberal Democrats, Jeremy Corbyn, leader of the Labour Party, north of the border, we're talking about all five major political party leaders who staked their reputations and the reputations of the majority of their parties inside Holyrood and Westminster on this decision. Well, are they considering their positions? Are they considering what might happen? Because there's clearly such a disconnect south of the border between what voters wanted and what those were saying in Westminster, that it's surprising that if David Cameron's resignation becomes the last of this, I don't think it will be, to be honest, Fatima.
Well, of course, Amina, now it's all about what happens next, right? So with British Prime Minister David Cameron saying there needs to be somebody else to take Britain to quote-unquote its next destination, what would that mean? Basically, what kind of a new government are we looking at? And also, as far as these negotiations go with the European Union, which will be opening up soon, British Prime Minister David Cameron has said that he wants representatives from Scotland and from Northern Ireland to be part of those negotiations. Is he trying to ward off that discontent that might rise up in Scotland, in Northern Ireland, from this Brexit?
Thank you. Well, the discontent in Scotland and Northern Ireland is already here. I mean, your report earlier talked about the Sinn Féin position on trying to unify Northern Ireland with the Republic of Ireland. So that's going to be an issue that will continue to bubble. Nicola Sturgeon has reiterated her government's position on perhaps bringing that independence question back on the agenda. And some would argue rightfully so. It wasn't a part of the negotiations, the 2014 referendum here, and perhaps the result would have been different had there been a divorce. Proceedings are already started between the EU and Britain. But let me just answer one of the earlier questions you posed. What happens next? Well, there is no question that there's been disunity and a practical civil war within the Conservative Party. With the Prime Minister stepping down, what about the position of the Chancellor? Mr. George Osborne, he staked his political reputation also on trying to get that Remain vote. And for a while, it looked like it would be a gamble that paid off. Now, he talked before this, the vote yesterday, about this emergency budget that would have to be enacted if Brexit were to happen. Will he be a man of his word and push that through? Was that just political blustering? There are, of course, conversations now to be had about who might step into that space, the vacuum that David Cameron's resignation will be creating. Theresa May, who is a known Eurosceptic, has kept her powder relatively dry on these issues. She came out for the Remain camp, but very, very low key. So her name hasn't been attached to a lot of the bluster and the political rhetoric and bickering. Michael Gove, personally, I feel that his political capital was used up by this campaign. But who's to say that there isn't a push from some of those 80-odd plus ministers who signed a letter to David Cameron saying, we support you, but with conditions? And what of Boris Johnson? It was a canny political move when the former mayor of London said he was throwing his weight behind the Leave campaign. Was that just strategy for the country or personal political ambition that the blonde one wanted to realize? It's going to be ugly. It's going to be a dogfight in the Conservative Party. And hopefully it doesn't take the party further to the right. Because let's be honest, when Marie Le Pen congratulates you on a decision you've made politically, perhaps you need to wonder if that decision was the correct one.
Indeed. I mean, however, let's look at this from another perspective, because as you mentioned earlier as well, that the Leave campaign included people from a huge, wide-ranging spectrum. It wasn't just the far right or the UKIP supporters. It was people on the left as well. However, now, I'm more curious about whether or not these traditional parties like the Conservatives or like even Labour will be able to survive this storm. Or are we going to look at alternative parties, the smaller ones, take the leadership role?
Well, all bets politically are off at this stage, in all honesty, because what you're having, as mentioned by a couple of the pundits before, is that disconnect between what's going on in Westminster and what people on the ground actually want. Now, I was speaking to a few members of the radical independence movement up here in Scotland who said they voted Leave not to align themselves with the rather nasty, bitter, anti-immigrant, anti-refugee rhetoric that was coming out of some sections of the campaign, but to actually dismantle themselves from a system in Brussels that they felt was holding back those kinds of conversations. They wanted the Britain not to be harping back to this quote-unquote golden age and when Britain was great, because let's remind ourselves, Britain earned a lot of its wealth through the slave trade, through the blood, sweat, and tears of Africans across the Atlantic. So that's not really something to be proud of and something to be harping back. So they wanted a break with that, not to align themselves with the Nigel Farages of this world, but in an attempt to draft a new Britain, one that was more tolerant, one that was more aware of its international obligations, one that was perhaps not as eager to go to war more eager to listen to the concerns of the global community and not just be an insular one moving ever faster and ever closer in. The question now that the Leave camp have got it, will those different voices find a way to sit at the table and have really meaningful discussions about this? Or will this just be a situation that's co-opted by the very right of that conversation? That is the great fear here this morning. And we've just had a comment from Mark Carney, who's governor of the Bank of England, trying to steady the market. He was, of course, a very vocal Remain voter. But he wanted it to be clear, now that the dust is settling, can we please draw back on some of those financial concerns? Because everybody will suffer if the pound continues to drop, if the FTSE 100 continues to lose share value right now.
All right, a lot more uncertainty there for Britain, more questions than answers. We're going to have to wait and see how this pans out. Press News, Amina Sayle is standing by in Glasgow with the very latest. Amina, thanks very much indeed, and we'll be getting back to you for more updates, of course.